But right now, it's time for History Matters, This Week in History, with the one and only Scott Washington, historian extraordinaire, who joins us in the studio, as always, on Thursday afternoon. Happy Boxing Day, first day of Kwanzaa, fourth day of Hanukkah, and day after Christmas. How are you?
Is that 12 days of Christmas, you know, on the first day? Well, this is like
This is the second day of
That's
Christmas, right?
Right?
Everyone always thinks the 12 days of Christmas ends on Christmas, but starts on Christmas.
No, it does. Yeah. So it keeps on going. So just when you thought you're out of the gift giving,
you've only just begun.
That's exactly right. But that's one of those things to know. And Kwanzaa, which was developed in the 1960s, it covers 7 days, so that's another one. And Hanukkah covers 8, so
yep.
These are multiple days, and you know, sometimes we think Christmas season has been going on since October.
Well, it has been going on since October. Those Christmas decorations up the day after Labor Day, if I remember right.
I was hearing the Christmas carols in the mall already, and I'm thinking, that's great. I'm getting a start on next year, get this in the
mood.
So yes, you can keep on celebrating, and since this is the week when we have Christmas, we will have to touch on a few interesting things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, here's one, a nice thing that happened just by accident. There's a couple of things that are accidental this week. This one happened on December 24th, 1955, when a Colorado Springs Sears store ran an ad asking children to call Santa. However, there was a misprint, and instead of
misprint in scare quotes. I think this was a prank.
It gave the number for what is today NORAD, the Defense Highly Secure Facility.
Mm-hmm.
And so the soldiers started answering it, and instead of just shutting it down, they started giving actually information. Yes, we are tracking Santa Claus now, and they've continued that ever since. You know,
yeah.
That's to their credit.
See, this is why I think that Sears did it on purpose. I think someone from Sears got the number for NORAD and said, let's just do this. And the reason I think that is, of all the numbers that they could have accidentally printed, they printed the number of an agency that specializes in tracking people,
right? Yes, but I think
right?
it was accidental. I don't think anybody knew that number. That's the thing. I think it was just a, you know, missed number.
I don't know. Colorado Springs is a military town. I think someone got wind of that number. I think someone fed it to Sears. This is my conspiracy theory for this week. I think this was an on-purpose accident.
Okay, well, there's another accident that happens on December 24th. And this is one that's probably little known about Columbus. Now we think of Columbus. He sails with the three ships. He discovers this alternate land we call America. And, you know, there's all, we think that's great storied history. However, on December 24th, he was sleeping, and the steersman, the person who was guiding the boat, decided to take a nap, and they left it in charge of a cabin boy.
Like you do.
Guess what happened? Well, the ship struck a sandbank. This is the Santa Maria in Haiti, and it sank the next day. So, well, 2 out of 3 ships, that's
right,
not bad.
Right.
And that was part of the reason was, let's make sure we have a number of ships, because exploration, it was not clear. They had the whole idea of how to solve longitude had not been solved yet, which required a clock. Pendulums didn't work. It really required a clock. That doesn't get solved until the mid-1700s. Mm. So at this point, you could sail east, but you just weren't sure where on east you were. So I think this was an interesting thing to say, well, let's hedge our bets. Let's make sure we have enough ships. So if anything happens to one or more,
right.
But this one was just one of those true accidents of history.
Does that mean the other two ships were just like two-thirds, like 60% more crowded on the way back?
I have a hunch that's true. Yeah, that's right. Little known fact of history. That happened on December 24th.
I bet it smelled terrible.
It probably was, it was already kind of an adventure trip. But,
yeah.
But
also, I'm going to call conspiracy theory on this one, too. I think the steersman accidentally ran into the...
You think he did it on purpose?
I think he accidentally ran into the sandbar, and then he grabbed the cabin boy and said, here, hold on to this steering wheel. I'm going to go pretend to sleep.
I think that's very
Oh,
possible.
My God, I've just woken up. What, cabin boy, have you done?
Well, you know, that's really interesting, and I think that you have... certainly the license to offer that theory as the reason why.
Blame it on the intern. It's the oldest trick in the book.
These are the accidents of history that do happen. Though in NORAD's case was a little bit better, worked out better, but now this other one was certainly a little bit different. But, of course, they weren't celebrating, and people said, but it's Christmas Eve. People weren't thinking like that. Mm-hmm. That doesn't happen until later, within the next couple of hundred years going forward, that you begin to see these celebrations of Christmas on the 25th. In fact, the pilgrims land right before what we call Christmas, and on Christmas Day, what we would think, oh, well, certainly they're celebrating. No, they're actually starting to build Plymouth on that day, because there wasn't any celebration of Christmas. That's a relative late invention.
Well, also, especially for the pilgrims and the Puritans, they just weren't into the celebrating thing, period, on any day for any reason.
No, that's right.
Massachusetts is the colony that banned Christmas, wasn't
yes,
it, didn't
yes,
they? Yeah,
for a number of years. That's right.
Alan Rickman and Robin Hood, and called off Christmas, slams the door.
Yes, we think of those first 10 amendments, and we think, oh, yes, the religious freedom and tolerance, but that comes later on.
Mm-hmm.
There's a good deal of intolerance there at the beginning, so you're right about that. This is the week when we have The Night Before Christmas is published in 1823, Clement Moore's famous poem, 'Twas the Night Before Christmas When All Through the House. That's published. A more recent one that's kind of been humorous was the TV show Seinfeld, and they developed this holiday they call Festivus the rest of us. And again, you know, these are the kind of things that there's no reason why you can't do that. And I'm sure that everybody has their own individual family celebrations that they do at Christmas time or at whatever festival you're celebrating, whether it's Hanukkah or Kwanzaa or the 12 days of Christmas, which we don't celebrate that much anymore. But there was a time, and that was the royalty would celebrate that, especially in King Henry VIII's time. It was like, let's do this for 12 days. And it's in the middle of winter. It's when the winter solstice is happening, what we say the beginning of winter. But within those 12 days, you will see a gradual increase of light. So it gets a little lighter by the end of that 12 days. And that's when, on the Christian calendar, you have something called Epiphany happening. Mm-hmm. And that's when the, supposedly, and in some countries like Latin America, you'll find the three wise men are giving gifts, and that's when gifts are given.
Yep.
So it's very interesting. That's part of we're all part of this inheritors of history. And sometimes those traditions continue, and sometimes, well, we just rediscover them.
Yep. And if you're in a particular relationship, you get gifts in between as well on the 26th and 27th and 28th.
Okay, now here's
I've got 10 Lords of Leapin' here. There's 20 in the back. Just stick them over there.
That's right. What? Why
I am
did you
so
do that?
Breaking up with this guy.
Yes, that will be another one for the date program. Would this help or hinder a relationship?
Oh, it would hinder the relationship. Like,
all right, here's another one that I think is just kind of interesting. And it starts on October 19th, 1952. And it's December 23rd, 1952, when this Frenchman named Alain Bombard completes a solo voyage across the Atlantic Ocean in a 15-foot-long boat with almost no provisions. And he was rowing across the Atlantic.
Wow.
And he obviously lived on fish and plankton and so on. But the thing is, this is what I just love, he did it to prove it could be done.
All right.
And I'm sure, you know, this drives a lot of exploration,
too. It's the same reason they climbed Mount Everest,
that's right?
Like,
that's
it's right.
Or
there, the Mayflower, let's do it.
Or even the, when we have the folks who were exploring and sinking the Santa Maria with Columbus.
How many fishing rods do you think he brought with him? Because Columbus brings three ships on the off chance that one of them sinks.
Right.
What happens if, like, some big fish grabs your fishing pole and snaps it or takes off with it? You got to have a backup or a net
that's
or something.
Good question. You know, we don't know, but I think that's a reasonable question. But obviously, this was not a trip planned with reasonable expectations. It was like, I think I could do this. And, of course, he had a tarp across it.
All right.
And so it was a little different than a regular sailing boat.
And probably, like,
boat.
Some canned provisions as well,
maybe
I'm sure.
Some,
yeah.
But still, that's a pretty gutsy thing to do for no other reason than I think I could do that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Different. Okay, I'm going to tell you, here's a really interesting one. It's a two connections with North Carolina. One is 1927, December 27th, is when the musical Showboat premieres on Broadway, Oscar Hammerstein and Jerome Kern's musical. And it really is American music. You remember Old Man River is probably one. Well, the interesting connection here with North Carolina is it's based on a North Carolina author, Edna Ferber, who wrote a novel about this. And she had seen a riverboat down in Bath, North Carolina, and
she spent some time on that riverboat,
yes,
didn't she?
She
like she
did.
Was researching with these.
And you know what's fascinating?
When
you look back at the history of North Carolina, especially you look at the 18th century maps, and you see these rivers that they were explorers were very careful to document, and there were riverboats that were plying, for instance, the Cape Fear, going all the way up to what was Cross Creek or what we know as Fayetteville today. And it's just hard to imagine that there were riverboats going, plying the waters here in North Carolina. That's kind of a wild thing to think about.
And not even just for navigation, but like the literal showboats that were bringing entertainment up and down the river as well. Yeah,
here's
as traveling shows.
And here's another one, and that's on December 28th, 1700. That's when the English explorer John Lawson, with a party of five Englishmen and various Native American guides, sets out from Charleston on a journey through the backcountry of Carolina. Had never been done before. Carolina was this great big expanse that included North and South Carolina. And he begins this epic trip. And at
he
one
just
point,
wanted to get to Carowinds.
Yes. It's like, there's got to be a Jimmy John's around here somewhere. I don't know. But he continues on. And at one point in February, the other group says, well, we're going to continue straight on into Virginia. And he says, no, I want to continue. And he documents even what we call Okeechobee Town, the Okeechobee in what is near or in Hillsborough today.
Oh, this is where he writes the book, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it takes him, and it's finally published in 1709. And this expedition lasted 59 days, covered about 550 miles. I mean, it's kind of amazing, but his book that he writes, a New Voyage to Carolina in 1709, becomes an instant bestseller all throughout Europe. It excites imagination, and it's one reason why you see immigration coming to North Carolina, picking up and building, because people read these accounts. And there's a little bit of racy accounts here, too, in there.
Mm-hmm.
And I think I probably related about after Hurricane when there was a blackout, and this was always on my bucket list. If I said, oh, I've got to do it. So I pulled out this large tome, and I lit a candle, and I started reading, and suddenly I understood why this would excite the imaginations of people.
What
really
was it
gripping.
About? It's got to be really well written.
It is. It's really well written, and some of it's describing unusual things. It's almost like I'm coming to a new planet and look at what's here. But some of it's some racy aspects there with the Native Americans that I'm sure was also like, whoa, this is a party place. Let's go to Carolina. And so people do. And it is one of the reasons why there is an increase of immigration to North Carolina in a significant way. It would take another half century for that to really develop in a large way. But that's another important part of North Carolina's history we just don't think about a lot, is that at the end of December, now, you know, back then, we're not even talking global warming. It's pretty chilly, but they're going off through there. And the only thing I can imagine is because it's a little bit easier to see, because there's no
No leaves on the trees,
exactly.
Right. Yeah, that's right.
In fact, I was talking with some people who play disc golf, and there's a course in Durham. And it's one that is typically very difficult to see the discs, except in the fall when there's no leaves. So it does make sense in a certain way. Let's go here because we can see further.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Did he go on the trip with the intention of writing a book, or was it just an exploration? What was the original purpose of it?
Well, he was making detailed notes about it.
Okay.
And I think that as a result of that there was encouragement from people that knew him, so you should publish this. And he was a bit of a scientist, as well as someone who knew how to spin a good tale. And so, whether he thought there would be a movie deal out of this, I don't know. Yet to be seen.
Full picture deal. Yes. We got Scott Washington here in the studio. History Matters. We got time for two more. What do you
got? Well, here is one that I think is pretty interesting. And some people probably know about this. In Mordecai Park in Raleigh, there is a small building that's been reconstructed and relocated there. That is the birthplace of Andrew Johnson,
yes,
the 17th president of the United States. Now, interesting enough, Johnson, of course, becomes the vice president under Lincoln when Lincoln is assassinated, becomes president. But do you know, and this is, I did not realize this, while Lincoln's Republican Party are the ones that are forceful in saying we've got to stop slavery, we've got to and have a progressive agenda, actually, Lincoln takes Johnson as vice president, who's a Democrat. Mm-hmm. And
it was a unity
Democrat ticket.
That's yeah.
That's right. You're right. And Johnson
was what, governor of Tennessee, and he was the one of the only like prominent figures in the South who stuck with the Union after secession, and that was the purpose. Yeah.
But he runs into, of course, and he was a tailor. He trained as that, and moves to Tennessee, and then he gets into the politics and becomes governor, and then as vice president, when he becomes president. And he runs into impeachment issues because he does a few things. And in fact, this week, one of those came out where he pardons in 1868, gives amnesty to all those who are participating in the Civil War, including Jefferson Davis, the president of the Confederate States. This becomes a real issue because these people had participated in a conspiracy at odds and contradicting what the Constitution says. You might say they were in treason to the United States of America, but he gives them amnesty, and then these people start to write books, including Jefferson Davis, and that creates a whole slew of problems. Well, this did not sit well with the majority Republican Congress, and when the 14th Amendment, do you remember the 13th Amendment, at the end of 1865, which eliminated slavery, made that illegal. But it took another amendment, the 14th, to give citizenship rights to everyone, African Americans, who had been in slavery. Mm-hmm. And Johnson opposed that.
Right.
And this is what brings him the full ire of the Republicans in Congress, as I understand it. Maybe you
and then there was
insights.
The, I mean, it's the 14th Amendment, it's amnesty, and it's Reconstruction as well,
right.
And it's the policy of Reconstruction and how do we deal with bringing the Southern states back in. And the thing that actually gets him impeached is, I want to say it's called the Tenure of Office Act, where it's the Secretary of War, and I'm going to get some of the details wrong, I guarantee you. The Secretary of War, I think, was Edwin Stanton, and
yes,
he was a Republican.
It.
Yeah,
yes.
And he was very much with the Republicans in terms of the kind of the military approach to Reconstruction, and much more forceful in terms of requiring the Southern states to adopt certain policies, voting rights to African Americans, and things like that. And Johnson wanted to fire Stanton. And Republicans very quickly passed the Tenure of Office Act saying you can't fire cabinet secretaries without congressional approval. And Johnson did it anyway. And that was the thing that got him impeached, among other things.
And he only escapes removal from office by one vote.
Yeah.
But he is not well regarded after that by many people in Congress because of that.
Or so, by history, I think.
Yeah, history, that's exactly right. And that's why we can say, thank goodness. I mean, it wasn't enough to have the 13th Amendment that gave people freedom, but then you had to go out and say, no, the 14th Amendment, because we have to say they're American citizens, and the 15th Amendment that says they can vote. I mean, you know, I have to be so obvious about this. I mean, that shows you how much resistance there really was and what a difference that has made to our history.
And we gotta call it there. But that is History
the
Matters for this week.
The accidents
of history.
Yeah.
Scott Washington, as always, thank you so much.
Thank
Merry Christmas.
You.